I guess now means now. Very good. Okay. Well, welcome everyone to the June 21st meeting of the Delta Independent Science Board. Yesterday was the longest day of the year, but I promise that this will not be the longest Zoom meeting of the year. We will try to keep on schedule and cover some interesting topics. So, first, I officially call the meeting to order, and let's give an overview of the public comment process. You can follow these instructions on your screen or on the meeting notice, and we will take written questions and comments as well. Moving on to the next, we need to take a roll call of members to establish the quorum. So I'll just say your name, state your name, and whether you have any new declarations. Virginia.
Virginia Dale, no new declarations.
Tom.
Tom Holzer, no new declarations.
Anna.
Anna McCulloch, I have a slight new declaration. I had previously declared that I was co-chairing some expert panels for Schmidt Futures, which has now been renamed Schmidt Sciences. And I'm now transitioned to a role of serving on their advisory board for two of their programs. One is in carbon cycle science and one is in freshwater.
Very good. Bob.
Bob Nyman, no new declarations.
Obey.
Jayanta Obaisekera, no new declarations.
Kenny.
Kenny Rose, no new declarations.
Are you sure?
I think so.
I have a note about your July 19th presentation to the review of the effects analysis.
Yeah, that's probably worth. Let's see. So I was the lead writer on a review before the Independent Science Board entered my life. And it overlaps with the National Academy Committee review. And I was waiting because I'm still waiting to get more details on exactly what I'm going to cover, but it's probably, at least it's probably right, it's probably sufficient. So I was supposed to be on the National Academy Committee, and instead I'm on the ISB. So they've asked me to come and remotely summarize what the review was, because we went into a lot more detail than they're all planning on. They're more at the 10,000 foot level, and ours was very focused. So basically, the review is public, and I'm going to stick with what the review said when I give them a briefing of what the review said, and then there'll be a Q&A.
Okay, so all the information's public. Good to know.
Yes.
Okay, great. We'll move along then. Inga.
Inga Werner, no new declarations.
And I'm Lisa Wanger, no new declarations. Now I'll turn it over to Margot Mattson for housekeeping for people in-house.
Hi there. Just to remind people that in an event of evacuation at the Resources Building, everyone should remain calm, take all of your belongings, and proceed to the nearest exit out of the building. Staff will gather at the evacuation point at 1615 9th Street, and the public is welcome to join. And a reminder that no food or beverages are allowed in the meeting room. Thank you.
Thanks, Margot. And now I'll just give a quick overview of the agenda before we dive in. So our main topics today are to hear from the authors of the CyanoHabs monitoring strategy on how our ISB comments were assessed, addressed, or not. We're going to discuss the Delta Science Program's draft grand challenges to Delta Science. We also are going to discuss the contents of our draft letter to the Delta Plan 5-year review and take action on next steps. And then we're going to discuss public comments received on the Delta ISB's Food Webs review. Are there any public comments at this point, Edmund?
There are none.
Great. And I'll just start with agenda item two, which is the Delta ISB Chair's report and business matters. So the IEP workshop in April generated a lot of great discussion, and We drafted a congratulatory letter to the organizing team, highlighting what we thought were some strengths of the conference. And a copy of that is part of your meeting package. And mostly what we did was acknowledged that this is really a rare opportunity for the interagency scientific communication and collaboration that we promote that is needed to examine complex issues from multiple perspectives. And so we acknowledged those thought-provoking talks and discussions and encouraged future meetings. Next, the Bay Delta Science Conference will be at the end of September, beginning of October. And that's 9:30 through 10:02. And so that's right before the ISB meeting, which is on October 3rd and 4th this fall. So this is going to be a good opportunity to share preliminary or final findings of the Delta ISB reviews. And we submitted four abstracts or session proposals. So one of those abstracts was an oral presentation on the Food Webs review. There's going to be a special session on DMDU, decision making under deep uncertainty, where we will provide an overview of where we are and get feedback on the preliminary findings. There'll be a DMDU talk in a separate session that was organized by Alejo Cross-Polk and Brett Milligan on post-normal decision making. And Obey is going to give a talk there. And then a poster on the monitoring enterprise review. So we'll be active in that conference. Of course, we encourage everyone to attend. And then we have public comments, correspondence that have been received since the last meeting. We have three things. So California Water Research provided correspondence, a copy of correspondence with the Delta Stewardship Council about Delta ADAPTS and water supply reliability, and really raises concerns about incorporating equity and vulnerability when modifying water quality standards. And we certainly appreciate those comments and we'll take that under advisement. California Water Research presented a second item, which was about the potential for hydroclimate changes that we could be shifting back to a wet regime and what could that mean for the Delta ecosystem. And I'm sure the folks who sent that know that we have a lot of concerns about this, and we will take these comments under advisement under our as part of our reviews and other activities. And then a third thing from California Water Research was characterized. The title was Delta ISB refusing to sign off on Delta plan performance measures due to a lack of external review. And we appreciate Deirdre Desjardins sharing her perspectives on the discussion that took place in 2017. And during that discussion, the board was asked to review the draft Delta plan performance measures. But after the discussion, the ISB expressed the need for external reviewers with that incorporated subject matter experts to conduct that review. And that was conducted by the Delta Science Program on behalf of the council. So it went a different route. Okay, are there public comments?
There are none.
Okay. All right, moving on to agenda item three, then we'll start diving into the meat of the cyanohabs issues. So, we have a presentation. The Delta Science Program facilitated the development of a monitoring strategy for cyanobacterial harmful algal blooms, or HABs, in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. And this draft is the culmination of over 2 years of work where the authors sought public comments on the document from February 24 to March 24. And of course, the ISB has expressed interest in this monitoring strategy since HABs were a potential review topic after we hosted a well-attended panel discussion in 2020. HABs was identified as a monitoring gap in our 2022 monitoring review. And this strategy could lead to implementing some of the recommendations from our monitoring enterprise review. So, we really would like to see some of this implemented if possible. And went ahead and made some comments on that. So Anna Michalak and Diane McKnight took the lead in submitting comments on the draft strategy. And we've invited Ellen Preece of DWR and Tricia Lee of the Delta Science Program to provide an update on the strategy and how the comments were addressed. And we really appreciate that they took the time to come and respond to our review. So I'll turn it over now to Ellen and Tricia for their presentation.
Great, thank you. Get my screen up. All right. Good morning, Chair Wanger and members of the board. I'm Tricia Lee. I am a senior environmental scientist with the Delta Science Program. And also on this item will be Dr. Ellen Preece, who's a senior environmental scientist with the Department of Water Resources. And Ellen was the lead author for the development of this strategy. And like Chair Wanger just mentioned, we are going to walk through our responses to the Delta ISB comments on this strategy that we drafted over the last year or so. But I just wanted to start with a little bit of background just for everyone's refreshment on what this document really is. So the driving factor for developing this document is that there is some data collection that goes on that can help us inform our understanding of HABs. And often we are using this acronym CHAB, which is cyanobacterial harmful algal bloom. So you'll see us use that term interchangeably throughout. But this data collection is not well coordinated. We do understand some major variables and influences on the development of HABs, like nutrients, temperature, residence time. We lack this detailed site-specific information on cyanobacterial harmful algal bloom status and trends. So this kind of knowledge is really what we would need to be able to implement any additional mitigation measures or adequately forecast for cyanobacterial harmful algal blooms. So an example of how we could be better coordinated in monitoring, on the left, we have an image showing where data has been collected for this visual index. And the visual index is this little scale at the bottom here. Crews go out and they're able to just quickly take this visual information to detail how what level of cyanobacteria are in, it's usually just microcystis, are in the water column. And it's really just a way to get like a quick value for a lot of different crews that are going out, not necessarily specifically monitoring for cyanobacteria. And you can see there's kind of this like hot spot here in the around central Frank's tract and down into Stockton. And however, on the right, we see where there are routine monitoring efforts going for taking phytoplankton identification samples. And there's very few that actually correspond where we're seeing these hotspots for cyanobacterial harmful algal blooms. So this is an opportunity for us to just identify where there's this strategy really is an opportunity for us to identify where there's an opportunity to make sure that we are collecting data that supports the information that we need for a better understanding harmful algal blooms. So this strategy itself, the Delta Science Program was approached by the Central Valley Regional Water Board and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to facilitate this process of developing this monitoring strategy for the Delta. And so the Delta Science Program hosted this collaborative and interagency workshop in November 2022. And we have information available on what precipitated from that workshop online. And while developing the monitoring strategy, the authors also worked with tribes and environmental justice experts over the last year. And earlier this year, we also kicked off this kind of community collaboration work group, which we think will maybe provide the beginnings of the implementation for this strategy when it is we do get to the stage of implementation. Like mentioned, we also had this 30-day comment period, which this board chose to provide us with comments for, which we're really grateful for. And following that, we brought this before the Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee in April and received their endorsement on the utilization and implementation of this strategy. So with that, I am actually going to just go ahead and jump right into the comments themselves. And what we've done here, we're addressing 12 comments. That on the left side of all these slides is going to be the ISB comment that we received. And then the right is going to go through how we are addressing those comments. And then Ellen and I are just going to switch off who is addressing the comment. And so these comments were on the executive summary, and the mention of the public health, the protection of public health as a goal was not mentioned or explained. And we actually have now at this point realized that public health is something that can be included in the strategy, because if you read through the strategy, it's kind of at a level where, depending on your management questions, you can implement the strategy for whatever management questions you desire, including public health. Ellen will speak on this a little bit more later. And they're not mentioned specifically in the executive summary. Instead, we have this kind of conceptual model that goes through, not really conceptual model, this almost like adaptive management wheel, where it goes through how we are going to be implementing this strategy in a phased approach, or we intend to. And then additionally, there was a comment on the funding context being unclear, and we wanted to make really clear that there's no funding associated with this project. This is something that is really just born out of the community need. And what we would like to do with this is that we really are leaning on the collaboration of the community. We're building collaboration amongst different groups, and we just really need to identify where there are any like nexuses with other ongoing monitoring where we can expand and get data collection that can support the implementation of this strategy. But at other times, we are going to be just relying on opportunistic special study funding to arise. And I think we talk about this a little bit more in further slides as well. Then I'll hand it over to Ellen for the next slide.
Hey, good morning. So I'm going to address comment two. This is also about public health. So the comment from the ISB was that we need to present the problem more explicitly and firmly from the perspective of public health. And we wanted to be clear that the language and the strategy is intentionally general. We did start trying to be less general in our draft, and the feedback from the community was that we weren't there yet. They wanted more general language in the strategy, with the idea that we could work towards more specific language in the future once these management questions are better defined. And so we really want the strategy to address a wide range of management questions, because of what we heard is that people have different priorities for what their management questions are. However, we did add an example management question for public health. So we have a table in the strategy that provided some example management questions from different agencies. And they were just examples. They weren't intended to be comprehensive, but we did add a public health comment in there because you, along with another public commenter, requested a little bit more public health information in the strategy. And then the other part of that comment was, in addition, the regulatory framework for monitoring CHOPs could be more clearly explained. And we just want to emphasize that there is no regulatory framework for monitoring CHOPs in the Delta. There are different groups that are possibly working towards that, but at this time, there is no regulatory framework.
Ellen, so the next comment that I'll take is on satellites. So we got this comment that was really great about the different types of satellites that might be available for really expanding our data collection. And so we did add some more information on satellites into the strategy, but the crux of the issue is that many satellites don't have fine enough resolution to give us any data on the small waterways of the Delta. Although we do recognize that there is an opportunity for many tools to maybe increase their resolution and that this may be happening. So moving forward, these tools may become more useful in the future as they might be calibrated for something like the Delta. And also we hadn't yet mentioned that the State Water Board also has this statewide freshwater harmful algal bloom strategy, in which they go into greater detail on remote sensing recommendations. And our strategy very much leaned on that more statewide approach and just created a more specific Delta approach. And in that way, we didn't want to reiterate a lot of what was already in the freshwater harmful algal bloom strategy. And instead, all that information is pretty well expanded on in that document. And so we can make some points in the strategy instead to where that information might be better found.
Okay, the fourth comment was more broadly, there's an opportunity to think more deeply about what an integrated approach that includes remote sensing, drone flights, and in-situ observations might look like. So this is building off the comment that Tricia just went through. An integration of these monitoring approaches in real time could be used to support effective management decisions to mitigate severe Seahabs. We just want to reiterate that we appreciate this input and agree, but we do largely defer to the FHAB strategy that has a really comprehensive approach to remote sensing and has a lot of different specific action items that they've identified for the state to take in regards to this. So we did add special. Or we have special study 3.56 that addresses the combined use of remote sensing and drone imagery.
And then comment five, this was one of my favorite comments because I am a nutrients person. So there was this comment on, that we didn't really get into. We had this section two of the strategy where we went through, kind of what is the state of the science on the what we know about harmful algal blooms. And this comment was about we don't, it seems that there's not enough information on interactions between these drivers. What do we know about nutrient stoichiometry? And, maybe there are some controls that are limiting the relative abundance of the different types of phytoplankton. And we realized that, oh yeah, we should have actually expanded on this a bit more. Maybe it was just too obvious to us because we do have some pretty extensive studies of the impact of nutrients on cyanobacteria or on phytoplankton populations in general in the Delta. And so we will make some attempts to expand that a bit more, make sure that that is more adequately included directly in that section two background. And what we do know, if you're not familiar with these studies, is that this system has a very high nutrient load to the system, and actually we don't see the chlorophyll response that we would expect from the high nutrients in the system. So it's kind of this high nutrient, low chlorophyll system. And that in general, across the board, nutrients, including silica, don't limit the growth of phytoplankton, including diatoms. And there's another comment later that kind of ties into the other side of this. But yes, we definitely do recognize that the role of nutrients in the environment. And at this time, we don't believe that this is something that's controlling the relative abundance of the different types of phytoplankton.
And then this comment is on toxin production. So the draft strategy focuses very strongly on the growth rates and abundance of cyanobacteria and much less so on the concentrations of toxins produced by the cyanobacteria. And the comment is that toxin concentrations are of critical importance for assessing human and ecosystem health, and that the strategy should address them more directly. So, I mean, we agree definitely that the toxins are an important part, and we do want them incorporated in the strategy. We do mention them throughout some, but we did add a special study to address this issue looking at cyanobacteria, biomass, and species. It's probably also worth mentioning that the USGS at this time is implementing one of the recommendations in the strategy, which is designing a monitoring plan. And that's where they're going to really dive into toxin monitoring and the ways that we want to monitor the toxins. And so, once again, we're a little bit general in our strategy here. And once people take these different action items and begin implementing will be much more specific.
And so this is one that I think is kind of like the flip side of the nutrients one that we were talking about earlier. And this comment was on the role of selective grazing. And I think, you know, we all hear about the clam and the invasive clam that has had an effect on the phytoplankton populations in the Delta. And this really got us thinking that this is something that we could potentially be looking into a bit more. And, you know, because of the invasive clam and the pelagic organism decline that happened in the early 2000s, there have been a lot of studies on grazing effects of the water column. But we also do think that this was a really great comment, and we'll be adding a special study to investigate the impact of grazing on phytoplankton community composition, not just, you know, the amount of chlorophyll has gone down because of the clam population going up. So thank you for that comment.
And then just to follow up on the comment that Tricia made too, a couple of colleagues and I just finished a study where we looked at clams accumulating the toxin microcystin in the Delta and using these clams kind of as a tool to monitor toxins. And so we just had a paper come out on that, and happy to share it with the board if you all are interested. So for this comment, this is the Microcystis Visual Index, which is a tool that Tricia mentioned earlier in the presentation. She showed the figure with the different colored circles, with the warmer colors being higher Microcystis Visual Index. And so we just wanted to share this scale with you, that the observer is in the field and they look at the water column and they kind of compare the water column to this scale to rank how much microcystis is in the water. And so your comment was that you strongly support the idea of the Microcystis Visual Index being the longest running data record in the HABs and could be ineffective as an indicator for high concentrations of cyanotoxins. And so we just thank you for that comment.
All right, and then this comment, this is our ninth comment. This was asking us to make sure that we are taking into account these other well-studied systems with harmful algal blooms that we might be able to learn from. And we think this is a really great perspective. We did do some mentioning of other strategies throughout our monitoring strategy, such as the Interstate Technology Regulatory Council. They have these strategies for preventing and managing harmful cyanobacterial blooms for benthic and pelagic, as well as the State Water Board's Freshwater Harmful Algal Bloom Monitoring or Framework and Strategy, which is a statewide, California statewide harmful algal bloom strategy. So we did really try to lean on those as much as possible, or where it made the most sense. And we do really think that during implementation, there's another role and another opportunity for us to be looking to these other systems to be able to include those technical and scientific advancements that have been done in other estuaries or in other, in other systems. To be able to not have to rebuild the wheel on everything that we're doing, but really do want to make sure that we're learning from other systems and implementing where there is any nexus.
Okay. So this comment, it's again about the draft strategy being quite general and not sufficient for forming the basis of a detailed monitoring plan. And as I mentioned earlier, this general approach was recommended by numerous stakeholders, and USGS is being funded currently by the State Water Board to put together a detailed monitoring design. And it's specifically citing our strategy as the reason they were able to allocate money for the design. So you know, we felt that we identified some of these important items and we were general on purpose so that others could form advisory groups or groups. For example, the USGS is interested in reaching out to a variety of different community members who have expertise on monitoring and then using that information to develop this detailed monitoring design. The next comment, part of the comment, is that the phased approach for developing and implementing a plan over a five-year period seems to be mismatched with the rapidly increasing frequency and severity of HABs and just the general urgency of addressing high toxins that have been observed in some locations of the Delta. And so we agree that this is a highly urgent issue, and we are encouraging the science community and decision makers to identify methods for prioritizing implementation of this strategy. And, you know, for example, really appreciate that the State Water Board is like already allocated some funding to move part of the strategy forward, even though the strategy is not completely final yet. Also, implementation of the strategy will be a collaborative effort to identify additional details based on community priorities. There are a number of efforts in place to monitor HABs in the Delta, and these are continuing. And one of the goals of our strategy was to bring all of these efforts together and so that we have a more collaborative approach. And then the last part of the comment was considering the recommendations in the review of the monitoring enterprise in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta, authored by the Delta Independent Science Board, may also be helpful. And we just want to thank the Delta ISB for that review, which we found helpful in writing the monitoring recommendations as well as the adaptive management sections.
All right. And then this comment was on, we have this list of special studies for anyone who doesn't remember, it's not as familiar, and it's quite an extensive list of special studies that we recommended. And this comment was on, you know, maybe there is an opportunity to prioritize these, and maybe the final report should be determining which ones should be done first. And I think this really gets back to a lot of what Ellen and I were hearing during the development of the strategy, is that I think there was a little bit of people didn't want us to make the decisions in our small group without the influence of the greater community. And we do feel like this document is very much for the community and needs to be implemented by the community, given that it is not funded and there's no promised funding coming for it. So in order to create that value to the community and to have them have their voices heard, we decided that we had considered prioritizing them, but we decided this is one of those places where different groups have different priorities. Different groups are going to be working to implement this. And we chose to just keep them as listed as like in different themed groups, because it may just be that special studies are the ones that are going to take on funding a lot of these, little truncated bits of money that may be coming in from different areas, maybe the ones that end up funding these special studies. And we really want to leave it up to the community to prioritize how they determine is most relevant to their organization or to their mandates. So that is why we decided not to prioritize the special studies. But we do think in the next steps of through implementation of this strategy, that a lot of those special studies, there will be kind of like a natural fit of what is most relevant for the community at this time.
And the last slide is on funding. So the comment, beyond the scope of the monitoring strategy document itself, the ISB wants to emphasize its occurring funding for HAB monitoring should be a high priority. And we thank you. And we really agree that it is imperative that the community rapidly acquire funding and resources to advance the strategy. And then the second part was in support of this goal, the connection between the potential funding approach and the regulatory framework for managing water quality and ecosystem protection in the Delta could be identified more clearly in the final strategy. And we just want to, again, reiterate that we don't intend to determine regulatory mechanisms for funding monitoring. In fact, one of the public comments was very clear that they did not want that in here and thought it was outside of our kind of purview to address. So we do not want to address that in here. And there is currently no regulatory framework specific for CHAMPS. So that wraps up the comments, and I just have a couple more slides to go through. The first is the status and implementation of the Delta CHAMPS strategy. So the status is we released that draft strategy for the 30-day public comment period in March 2024. And again, want to thank you for providing comments that we think will improve the final strategy. It was endorsed by DPIC in April 2024. And currently, we are addressing comments, and we expect a final version to be released later this summer. As far as implementation, I'll just repeat, I've now said it a few times, that we don't have funding for this project, and instead, we're leveraging other ongoing efforts. So we're putting together a multi-agency advisory group to lead implementation. We're going to leverage... my colleagues and I received a NOAA monitoring and event response harmful algal bloom federal funding money, which I'm going to discuss on the next slide. And so we're going to leverage that project to help implement pieces of the strategy. I also mentioned earlier in my talk that this, or in our talk, that the State Water Board is currently funding USGS to develop that monitoring design that will be much more specific and have a lot more details than our general approach in the strategy. And it will have very focused toxin monitoring as part of that design. And then we have those 19 special studies that we are, have recommended. And the idea there was that if various groups have, say, a university or an agency or whoever has a little pot of money, that they could choose a special study that was of interest to them and implement it at any time. Next slide. Okay, so this is the NOAA MERHAB grant that we were awarded. It's called New Technologies and a Coordination Framework for an Integrated HAB Detection and Monitoring System Across the San Francisco Estuary. I'm a co-lead on the project along with Dave Sen at SFEI and Keith Buma-Gregson at USGS. We have other PIs on the project, including Rafe Cudella with UC Santa Cruz, Ari Chelsky at SFEI, Tim Otten, who runs BenGenetics, a cyanobacteria laboratory in Sacramento, Meredith Howard with the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board, and then Tom Mumley with the San Francisco Bay Water Quality Control Board. We also have included in our project San Francisco Baykeeper and Restore the Delta to advocacy groups that span the estuary, Cal State Maritime Academy, and the California Department of Public Health. We were awarded this project October 1st, 2023, and it will go for 5 years. And we were provided $3 million for the project. And basically, the project, we have a number of different objectives, but we are spanning the entire estuary. We want to look at harmful algal blooms in the bay, between the bay and the delta, and in the delta. And I will mention one of the projects, two of the projects that we're working on that may be of interest to you. One of them is validating the satellite Sentinel-2, which has a finer resolution so that we can see harmful algal blooms in the Delta waterways. And so that will be a way to, you know, an output of this project will hopefully be that we have, we'll be able to use Sentinel-2 satellite imagery for tracking harmful algal blooms in the Delta, which would be really useful for future monitoring. And then the other piece that I want to mention, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit more in my next slide, but We, as part of this project, we're developing a data dashboard. So we'll have a site where we'll have a lot of different data streams that are pulled into a single website so that people, the public, can have access to a wide variety of HAB-related data. And then we're going to have a Delta-specific page as part of that data dashboard. Now, there's already a number of different resources for Delta HABs out there. And so we're going to just pull links to all of those pages onto our data dashboard. So the hope is that we just have this one-stop shop for HABs, HAB information across the entire San Francisco estuary. And then the next slide. I just wanted to highlight a few ideas of how we could link the Delta C-HAB strategy and our NOAA MERHAB project. So another one of our large project goals in MERHAB is that we've formed this Management Transition Advisory Group, and it's comprised of managers across the entire estuary, from state agencies, from the advocacy groups. We also have federal agencies involved. And once again, it's like starting a collaborative effort to monitor and respond to HABs across the entire estuary. And so we want to leverage that effort. The data dashboard I just went through with all of you, we wrote the data dashboard into the C-HAB strategy. So you may remember that term, and SFEI is the person or the entity creating that data dashboard. Then we have the special studies. So there are special studies, some of which will be addressed that are in the strategy that will also be addressed by the NOAA MERHAB. So, for example, the remote sensing. And then we're also looking at toxin transport between the Delta and the Bay. So that fits in nicely to some of the special studies that we have in the C-HAB strategy. We're expanding beyond the Delta-specific management questions in the HAB strategy, and MERHAB will be looking at estuary-wide management questions. And then an outcome at the end of our MERHAB grant period is that we will be developing an estuary-wide strategy. So it'll be building off the Delta HAB strategy that you all reviewed to look at the system as a whole.
Thanks, Ellen. And I just wanted to add a quick plug here. We at the Delta Science Program have been putting on these seminars, weekly seminars, and this next Wednesday we are having one on harmful algal blooms. So if members of the board or any members of the public currently in attendance would like to learn more about some of the ongoing harmful algal bloom work that's happening in the Delta right now, do join us this next Wednesday. Tamara Kraus from USGS will be presenting, as well as Hans Perold from UNC Chapel Hill. And that's it, and we'll take any questions.
Well, thank you so much, Ellen and Tricia. I really appreciate your thoughtful responses to our questions, and also very excited about that research project. I think that addresses a lot of our comments as well. So it's a good place to start. So I'll just open it up to the board at this point and see if we have any questions. I can't see people right now, so maybe we should take down the slides so I can see if people are raising their hands. There we go. Anna, please.
So first of all, thank you so much for the detailed feedback. Of course, it's great to see how carefully you've considered the input from the board, and it's wonderful to have you come in and talk to us directly so that we can have the conversation. So I on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for coming in and doing this. I just had a couple of comments. I'll mention them. I have three jotted down, and we can always come back and talk on them in a little bit more detail. First, on the remote sensing, the FHAB strategy that you mentioned, I think it was published in 2021, which on the one hand feels very recent. On the other hand, the the space of remote sensing of Earth surface properties is evolving so quickly that there may be things that are more recent than 2021 that are relevant to the work that you're covering. And so I'm not sure if it's within the scope of the work that you'll be doing in reviewing the strategy over the course of the summer. But, you know, just to mention two examples, the PACE instrument that was just launched earlier this year is obviously very relevant. I take your point about resolution, and that's something that would need to be considered. And then a second example is the EMIT instrument that's on the International Space Station that was also put in space more recently. It was not originally designed for water quality applications, but I know that the EMIT team at JPL is actually specifically very excited about exploring applications related to harmful algal blooms. And I'm happy to follow up on those, but really my point is just that 3 years ago is very recent for most things, but when it comes to space-based Earth observations, things are actually evolving very quickly. Second, a really minor point, in terms of the visual index, you had it on your slide, but just for others who are on the call, specifically beyond just recognizing the value of that visual index, you had a note in the report talking about providing broader regular training on the use of the visual index. And that was the part that we also want to highlight in our review as something that we felt was particularly important. And then last, this may be more of a topic for discussion, but the special studies, I take your point about it not being within your remit to really prioritize those. At the same time, there are so many of them. And then in response to our comments, you've added more still. And so I wonder if there's, you know, I think the spirit behind our comment about the number of special studies was related to the fact that it's hard to imagine an effective and coherent strategy for CHAD monitoring coming together unless at a minimum some subset of those studies found a way to come to light. They are all important. However, it seems that some of them are relevant across a broader set of ultimate, whether it be indicators or stakeholders or applications or whatever it may be. Often there could be potentially synergies among these special studies. And so I don't know what the solution is, but I think the concern is if the report ends up with 25, I think there was 19 originally, right? So now if you're up to 25 special studies, and if only some of those get done, and if the subset that get done aren't sufficient to really form the foundation of a monitoring strategy, what would happen in that case? So again, I think it's more of a topic for discussion, but I'm curious what you think about that and whether there's any way to get us part of the way towards saying these are the pieces that are absolutely necessary for an effective monitoring strategy, recognizing that beyond that core, there are myriad stakeholders, use cases, outcomes that we might be interested in, but perhaps some of these are really critical and others are, or maybe some of these are critical for all user groups and applications, whereas others might be critical for specific subsets. I'm not sure, but just something to flag. So those are my three comments. So the remote sensing, the training for the visual index, and then the studies.
Can I quickly respond? Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for pointing that out, and apologies to the whole room. I did truncate the comments in order to save space on slides. So some of what Dr. Vishwanath is talking about was in the comments, and I cut it out. That was me. And I think that I actually just thought of something, and maybe Ellen is thinking the same thing, is that maybe this is one of the very first steps of implementation is prioritizing special studies. Because I think what Ellen and I are saying are
You know, we don't want to be in this group of three or four people and decide for the whole community. But I do really understand what you're saying on, you know, if no one chooses what the top priorities are, then everything's a priority and then nothing's a priority. So I think that one of the first steps that we're taking here is we're creating this multi-agency lead implementation team. And then we're going to be working with the community to identify the best course of action for implementation moving forward. So we're really trying to make this an action-based stage of using the strategy. And maybe one of the very first things we do is as a bigger group is prioritize those special studies.
And it may be just taking a few that we prioritize and not necessarily ranking the other ones, because we want to, you know, as a researcher myself, I use these documents when I'm writing grant proposals, and you can cite to them, like, this has been identified as a project or idea. And so we didn't want to shut that door on people. We wanted people to feel like they could, if that was of interest to them and it fit nicely into their research project, maybe they could say, and this special study was cited in the strategy, and so we'd like to implement it. But I think maybe, so I guess I'm saying, I think we can kind of meet in the middle, like what Tricia is saying, like maybe choose a few that are of the highest priority and then not necessarily put any at the bottom in case people wanted to choose those as part of their research projects. And then backing up to the remote sensing, we did incorporate all of the language that you just mentioned about those other remote sensing kind of technology improvements, that we wrote that into the remote sensing section. So it is true that, like, in the special study, we rely on freshwater HAP strategy, and we could probably caveat that to make a comment about, you know, how rapid, you know, this technology is, because it's a very good point. But just want you to know that we did include all of the write-up that you provided as a comment on those other satellites and other space technologies into the strategy.
Great. Thank you so much. And I like this idea that you both mentioned of, even if you can't prioritize special studies in your report, which makes sense, to have a recommendation that prioritization itself be a priority, right, is really what you're saying.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me too. So that if even if you can't pick the three that you're talking about a few priorities, that clearly, because, and I think I agree with Anna that the problem is everyone pursuing their own interest doesn't necessarily create the greatest whole. So it's maybe a little peer pressure to think about the group and not just, yeah, those things. So Virginia, you had a comment.
Thank you first for doing such a good job in presenting an organized response. That was quite challenging and you did well. The point I wanted to bring up is actually the point we've been talking about prioritizing this. In the IAB comments, they mentioned, we mentioned having criteria for prioritization. And I think it would help you a lot to focus back on what the criteria are first, and then from that, move ahead with the prioritization or even just grouping.
Yeah, anything to add, Tricia? Yeah.
Thank you. I think that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that comment.
Go ahead, Inga.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't really have a comment. Thank you as well for the great presentation. And I just would like to get my hands on that paper that Ellen mentioned on clams accumulating the toxins. I would just like to say that I would like to have it. So,
okay. Yeah, it's a two-part study. The first, I can send you the link, and I think the next one will be published in the next couple of weeks, and I can get that to you too.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Any other comments from the board? Questions? Well, I'll just say that we do really appreciate this feedback, and you're demonstrating the realities to us of a democratic process versus our academic perspective of what would be efficient. And I think this is valuable on both sides for us to understand your constraints. So thank you. And yeah, we'll look forward to the revised draft.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Before you go, though, let's see if we have any public comments.
There are none. Thank you.
Okay. Got off easy. Okay. We'll move on to our next agenda item. Thanks. Okay. So next up, agenda item 4, a presentation and discussion of the draft grand challenges to Delta Science. So the Delta Science program is developing the third iteration of the Delta Science Plan, which aims to provide a vision, principles, and approaches for coordinating science in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. This iteration's proposed focus is on addressing the wicked problems or grand challenges facing the Delta Science. And I think what they're trying to acknowledge with those words is a way to address system level complexity and the need to balance trade-offs, because there are tough choices to achieve goals. So this draft Grand Challenges to Delta Science has been posted, and the authors are seeking feedback as they're written and cited, along with feedback regarding methods to address the grand challenges. And I do want to remind the board, the Delta Science program presented on the grand challenges in August 2023 on whether the use of this idea, grand challenges, as a concept for framing the 2025 Delta Science Plan. So we have a lot of 2025 Delta Science things we're reviewing, but ultimately this feeds the 2025 Delta Science Plan. And at that early meeting, we gave them some high-level feedback about using this approach. And we also asked for periodic updates. You know, we will eventually be reviewing the Delta Science Plan. And we said we didn't want to wait till the end to get in a few comments. So this is a key milestone where we can provide informal feedback prior to the formal review. So Tricia Lee of the Delta Science Program will provide an overview of the draft Grand Challenges document, and Rachel Klopfenstein is here to help answer questions. And so after the presentation, we'll discuss whether we want to submit written comments during the comment period. And those would be due July 12th. We have an ISB meeting on July 11th where we could discuss a written draft. So just keep that in mind as we hear this presentation by Tricia. Welcome back, Tricia.
All right, thank you. It's me again. Okay. So thank you for taking this agenda item. So I think Chair Ranger covered pretty much the basis for bringing this before the board today, but I did just want to, we have these grand challenges spelled out in a bit more detail that are posted now for public comment, but I did just want to go through a few slides to orient our community to where we are in this process. So as some background on the Delta Science Plan, this is a 5-year planning document for the Delta Science community to be developed through an open and transparent process. And this is really something that is informed by and created for the greater Delta Science community. It is called for in the Delta Plan to organize and integrate ongoing scientific research, monitoring, and learning about the Delta as it changes over time. So the Delta Science Program is currently working to develop the third iteration of the Delta Science Plan. So the first Delta Science Plan was in 2013, and the first Delta Science Plan was the one to call for these to be updated every 5 years to make sure that they are keeping up with the current state of science in the Delta. The second science plan was released 2019, and we're currently working on the third. So the Independent Science Board, when you all reviewed the 2019 Delta Science Plan, the ISB called for the science plan to be bolder, more flexible, and more strategic. And so that is what we really took to heart as we get into developing the 2025 Delta Science Plan. In previous iterations, we had structured the Delta Science Plan around major advancements for the Delta Science community, things like adaptive management, modernizing science infrastructure. And as we reviewed the implementation of the 2019 Science Plan to prepare for the 2025, we shifted a little bit in response to this call for a bolder approach by doing a literature review to be able to identify the grand challenges from these visionary documents in the Delta and use that as the structure rather than around these maybe more core functions that were like the adaptive management type of thing. So we're shifting a little bit to meet this need for something that's a little bit more bold. And this is something that was really thought up by our former lead scientist, Dr. Laurel Larson, and our former science deputy executive officer, Dr. Louise Conrad. They had this vision of this Delta Science Plan to be oriented toward addressing grand challenges to Delta science. So, like Chair Ranger mentioned, we presented last August, I can't believe it's been that long, we presented last August on the use of the grand challenges as a concept to frame the next Delta Science Plan. And after meeting with the ISB, we also brought this concept to additional Delta Science experts in November of that year. And then we recently had this, an interactive poster at State of the Estuary to hear some more feedback from the science community on the idea of these grand challenges. And we have also released the grand challenges as drafted in a more complete format for comment, given that this is something that we really do want to hear from the community on and make this document community oriented. We do want to know that we do want to make sure that the grand challenges as written through the literature review also reflect the needs and the what the community sees as grand challenges in the work that they do. So this is open for a 45-day comment period, and this comment period ends July 12th. And again, the concept, the idea is for us to use these as the structure for the next Delta Science Plan. So as a refresher on how we crafted these grand challenges, we reviewed Delta-specific visionary literature, and we identified 125 candidate grand challenges. And then we worked as a team to review the grand challenges against this criteria, which is defined by the National Research Council for a grand challenge is something that is compelling for intellectual and practical reasons and offers potential for major breakthroughs in science or science governance, and also must be feasible to address given current capabilities and assuming a significant infusion of resources. So after reviewing, I guess, the criteria, we had 17 remaining that were really grand challenges. And these actually really kind of fit together to turn into what we are now calling our final four grand challenges. And I am not able to present in great detail on what the four challenges really encompass. The essay does a much better job of explaining them in detail. But to give you kind of a flavor for what they are, the first grand challenge is on how scientists and managers must anticipate a world in which environmental conditions and regulations may be fundamentally different from those faced today. The second grand challenge is on that environmental change is outpacing the traditional pace of science. And then the third grand challenge is on flows of scientific information remain decentralized and poorly connected to communities and decision makers. And that the fourth grand challenge is that other ways of knowing, including traditional knowledge, remain siloed from decision making. So the essay is currently available for comment. If you go to this QR code link or visit this URL listed here, you'll find this webpage, which is screenshot to the right here. And the essay is linked at the bottom here. It's called Grand Challenges to Delta Science, Planning for Science in a Dynamic System. And comments, maybe the method for submitting comments is available on this webpage as well. However, in addition to the option for submitting public comment letters, we also created a survey, which is anonymous for anyone who wants to submit just a more quick response to the essay or to the grand challenges. And so there will be a series at this essay or at this survey, there are a series of questions that are targeted on the different grand challenges, and also kind of allows some quick responses, open form responses,
But at the same time, it is anonymous, so it can be really quick and can be more accessible for some individuals. So the next steps from here, July 12th, the public comment period will close, and we'll be working to integrate what we hear from the grand challenges into the fall of this year. We also plan to have a town hall at the upcoming Bay Delta Science Conference, in which we will be doing a little bit more working with dedicated leaders in the science, in the Delta Science community, as well as the general attendees of the Bay Delta Science Conference, to hear more about what they're looking for in the next Delta Science plan. And then this winter, we are planning to have, besides just this town hall, we're planning to have more targeted workshops on different elements of developing the Delta Science plan. And all of this will culminate in the draft Delta Science plan being released by fall 2025. So why we are here today, like Dr. Winter mentioned, we met last in August and we discussed how we would come back to the ISB at strategic points throughout the development of the Delta Science plan. And we feel that this is a strategic point to hear more from all of you on your feedback on this. And in general, what we're looking for, the major areas of feedback we're seeking on the posting of these grand challenges, is to better understand if these grand challenges capture the challenges that everyone is seeing in the Delta and that they do resonate with the community. And also, you'll find, I didn't get into this too much in this talk, but you'll find when you read these grand challenges, we do offer some ideas of these different strategies, action tools that we have that will be useful for addressing the grand challenges. And this gets into what the final Delta Science plan will more look like, is like, these are the grand challenges, but what are the tools, what are the actions that we take in the next 5 years to get toward addressing the grand challenges? So that is another major area of feedback that we're seeking, is if there are any thoughts on additional actions, tools that would be useful for addressing the grand challenges as they're listed. So one side on, like, are these the grand challenges as we all see them? Also, the second part on, you know, what are ideas on people that people know of for addressing these grand challenges? So we bring this to see if the ISB feels that this is a period in which they would like to participate in the development of this. And yeah, at this point, I will just turn it back over to you all for your thoughts and feedback. And I can stop sharing.
Thank you so much, Tricia. And again, we do appreciate you listening to us and developing processes by which we can contribute, because we do think it's much more helpful than waiting for a document to be all prettied up and then nobody wants to change anything. But I just, before we answer your questions, which are great questions, I just want to step back a little bit to better define the scope of what recommendations you're looking for. So ultimately, these grand challenges get turned into a plan that sets a vision for research, scientific research, right? So we're not trying to solve all the issues. Like, one might solve these things with a variety of tools, like different types of committees and negotiated processes and things like that. But what you're really looking for are science tools, right? To better understand the best way to do this and to use the evidence in the best way. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Okay, great. And then just, can you give us a little more understanding of how the grand challenges are, how you see the grand challenges getting translated into scientific research? I'm just a little fuzzy on that.
Yeah, so the difference between the science, maybe give a little bit more detail on what previous iterations of the science plan have looked like. These are ways that we kind of look at where there might be gaps in the science community for us to be able to address to better do science in the Delta. So it may not be specific, like we need to study this one thing to be able to better understand the Delta. It's more maybe at the level of, you know, as a community, we need to work on creating some structure to be able to better communicate between different groups, because, we recognize that communities are really disconnected right now from decision makers. And how do we create structures that bring in the voice in a more compelling way. And so the way that the science plan, the way that we will be looking to use the grand challenges for the structure of the science plan is to identify where there might be opportunities for us as a community to come up with creative solutions to work better together towards addressing the grand challenges. So, you know, the first grand challenge, or yeah, the first grand challenge on, let me toggle back so I can say it correctly to myself, or the second grand challenge on how environmental change is outpacing the traditional pace of science. You know, it's not so much we need to put out, we need to figure out a way to put out more, more ongoing measurements to be able to collect more data. It's more about how do we shift the way that we make decisions to be able to keep up with environmental change. And maybe one of those things is we can't wait for, we don't, at every juncture where we're making a decision, we use something like structured decision making in circumstances rather than waiting for our traditional pace of science of collecting data, publishing data, and waiting for peer review. Does that help?
It does, but it also raises other questions. But yeah, sure. we'll let the board weigh in. Rachel, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just a quick, and thank you. Trisha's response, I think, was super helpful. And just adding that to clarify, for the science plan, you know, big picture is more about how we as a science community do science. So we don't anticipate putting actions in here that really are about scientific research in the same way that the science action agenda does, because we have multiple products that sort of inform our Delta Science strategy. Our synthesis one, the State of Bay Delta Science, is looking at what's the state of science on the topic. The science action agenda prioritizes high priority science for a five-year timeframe that we use to fund. And then the science plan is our opportunity to take a step back and look at how we are working and what type of actions can help to improve that. So as Trisha said, with these grand challenges, it's putting a lens on more forward-looking challenges to give us actions that we can put in place as a science community. So a little bit less about research and more about, yeah, task forces, you know, new tools that we need to collectively, you know, elevate. Little bit less on an actual scientific research topic. So hopefully that also provides a little bit more clarity.
Yeah, that is helpful. Bob, go ahead.
Great, thanks, Lisa. And thanks to Trisha for a nice presentation. The document, I just have a comment, maybe a question, I'm not sure, but I read the document fairly carefully a few weeks ago, and it got me thinking about what are grand challenges and what are not grand challenges. You know, there's certainly hurdles and things, activities that need to be done. And I liked three out of the four grand challenges that you presented. I thought the first three were very well articulated. They were very general, but it was well articulated as to why they might be considered grand challenges. The fourth grand challenge bothered me a bit because I didn't see it rising to the same level as the first three. And it's an important topic, the incorporating traditional knowledge and environmental justice. And, you know, it certainly is a very important topic, but it didn't seem to come across as being quite as, or at the same level as the first three grand challenges. So I went back and I reread that. And right now I don't see how it actually contributes to the science in the Delta, how it might improve science in the Delta, or how, you know, you would tackle it in a way by which this science enterprise would benefit from that. And I don't know whether it's because it's missing examples of how, you know, traditional knowledge and other ways of knowing have actually provided us with great new insights, you know, innovations and so forth, that we haven't gotten from our more, I guess, more traditional approaches and so forth. So anyway, I guess that's my comment is to say the first three I can see where I can see those working. The first three grand challenges as a general framework, you know, for moving ahead. The fourth one, though, I do question. I wonder if it may someday, in the next few years, maybe, you know, may be articulated or accepted as a grand challenge. But I just don't think it rises to the same level as the first three right now. And maybe in the document, there's a way to talk about it as a, you know, as a hurdle that needs to be overcome or an activity that needs to be better explored so that when it comes up again, you're able to provide a really strong rationale for why that should be given, you know, such a high priority. So anyway, it's more of a comment than a question. It's just that I'm just letting you know that I felt uncomfortable with number four being a grand challenge. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Tricia, Rachel, do you want to say anything at this point, or do you want to just hear comments and?
I don't have a response for that comment just now. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that framing. Definitely will think about it.
Yeah, although, I mean, I guess having sat in on a tribal listening session, I did see, and maybe again, it just needs to be articulated a little better, but I did see that they were really promoting a systems-wide perspective that does tend to get lost in our reductionist techniques. And I think many of us on the board share that idea that you can learn things from a more systemic approach. And so, you know, I think there is a real comment there. Maybe it's just not articulated well. So an important strategy being articulated. Okay, now to my comments. So I'm going to completely shift gears here. So I'm viewing this very much from the lens of a decision scientist. And when I see you thinking through how to be more nimble in a rapidly changing future, what I've experienced in my career advising government agencies is that there are a lot of impediments to being nimble. And so I think this is both a research question and a process question of, you know, what are management structures that enable more flexibility, more rapid response? You know, you gave one example, but I'm also thinking of how hard it is to change how dams get managed. It's extremely difficult and time consuming. And that's the kind of thing that we've already run into in the Delta as limiting our responsiveness to atmospheric conditions. So it seems to me there's a need to kind of identify, the management challenges and then some research into what are some management options. And then a second point is, I appreciated both the call out to incorporating more social science and doing things like stress testing. There were hints of DMDU scattered throughout there, but I didn't see as much emphasis on kind of dynamic approaches. And I hope I'm not stealing what Obe was going to say, but because since he works in this area, but it really is a different mindset to think I'm not building one piece of infrastructure to last 100 years, which I mean, sometimes you have to do that. But the dynamic way of thinking is, what can I build now that gets me to the next decision point, you know, where I can collect more data and understand what is the best adaptive strategy here? It doesn't fit in all conditions. Sometimes you need to build the thing that lasts 100 years. So I'm not saying it's an either or, but there are also situations where it helps to rethink decisions as a dynamic process where you check in at various times as you gain more information, like those metro maps that we saw in one of the DMDU seminars. So that's my comment. Okay, and now I'll let Obe speak.
Yeah, I think, sorry, good afternoon or good morning. I think Lisa kind of said what I wanted to say to some extent. This is an observation, you know, looking at the grand challenges, even the last one, I immediately made connection to the DMDU work we are doing, particularly. So just an observation, in the long run, these two might very well be connected, particularly even one, two, and even the last one, You know, if I read it correctly, it's almost sounded like dynamic adaptive policy pathway type approach. Anyway, just an observation, and it might be good to connect these two at some point in time.
Thanks, Obey. Inga.
Sorry, I seem to have trouble unmuting here. Yes, I mean, my comment refers to the coordination of data science and communication to decision makers. And I thought it was really interesting to read the suggestion of having focused service centers on certain topics. Also because the center I headed in Switzerland was sort of that thing. So the center was very much established to communicate with the decision makers and to also provide the information that they needed to make decisions. If something like that, if these focused service centers could be created in the, within the Delta Science Council, I think that would be a wonderful thing to have. So I just wanted to say that I thought that was a really good way of going. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Inga. Go ahead, Virginia.
So my comments pertain to particular challenges that you talk about. So for the first one, anticipating a world in which environmental conditions and regulations may be fundamentally different. I was surprised that you didn't talk about adaptive management under that one, and maybe that's because you have so much of that under Grand Challenge 2, but it seems that that's got to be part of the answer for that first challenge. For Grand Challenge 2, where environmental change is outpacing the traditional pace of science, there was a lot of discussion about slowing the pace of change, but you didn't talk about the literature on emerging ecosystems or novel ecosystems. So I think it'd be useful to delve into that, that deals with conditions as they are and not trying to slow them down, that they're, we want to look at the features of those systems and not necessarily the ones that were in the past. And then there was also discussion here about the topical service centers, and I was wondering what you're going to do to avoid those creating a different kind of siloing systems around the topic selected. So siloing is a problem, but please avoid creating new ones. And then the last one, other ways of knowing, there was a lot of discussion about bringing the indigenous communities into thinking. But what I've learned how important it is to go to where they are, and I'm sure you know this, but it should be written in there, that when the indigenous groups have gatherings on the topics, it's important for the Delta Science to go there and not expect them to come always to Delta activities.
All right, these are all good comments. What about challenges that might be missing? Probably we're afraid to say things that might have been part of other things, but you know, your categories are broad, so it may not be so much what's missing as the details. Yeah, Bob.
I would say that the first three challenges are so broad that it's hard to think of anything that would be missing. I was trying to think of topics that I might want, you know, that I think would rise, you know, to be, you know, great challenges or great hurdles that have to be overcome. And basically I could find room in the first three for anything that I could think of. And, you know, so that may be a great service for allowing people, you know, to think broadly going forward. But also, there's also a problem, too, in making them too broad, because people then, you know, they think, well, you know, we can't handle that. It's just too much. It's way too much. And it just covers everything on this earth and the next earth that will come, you know, after us. And so anyway, it's something to, you know, to think about a little bit. But I guess to answer your question, Lisa, I can't think of anything that I would add that isn't already included somewhere in the first three. Thanks.
You've confirmed my speculation. Thank you, Bob. Obey.
Yeah, you know, I haven't read the details of Grand Challenge number one. You know, thinking of what Bob just said, you know, I was wondering, is that broad enough to cover what we call both stresses and shocks? Stresses that are evolving temporarily versus shocks such as, you know, huge seismic event, for example, or major levee failures. Is number one, does that include, and this is a question, does that include those types of rapidly evolving hazards, and what happens to the systems after that, or is it even recoverable? You know, those types of questions.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know that we include that specifically, but we certainly have more of that, I feel like, on the planning side of things for those rapid events that might be risks that the Delta poses. Face the Delta. Yeah, so like, you know, what are the risks of levee failure? What are the risks of extreme events? But yeah, that is a very interesting point. I haven't thought to crosswalk that in. Thank you for that comment. I'm going to take a look at that.
Yeah, and if I can just add, I think that dovetails a little bit with my comment earlier about where are we running into management challenges. So I would try to pair those.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I think Obey makes a really good point. Yeah, these extreme events are the killer events that we very often don't plan for. So that, and certainly seismic is a possibility with a lot of uncertainty in the Delta. The other question I have is the co-laboratory. It has been a big an important subject that's received a lot of attention, but in the in this document, it doesn't receive any attention. But it's so central to coordinating a lot of the activities in the Delta. It would seem like it should be part of the Grand Challenge. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, that's a really good point, and actually it might be something that in my mind I was like, check mark, we're doing this, so I didn't put it in as a tool that we can use. But I think that is a very good point, that we could definitely be talking about the things that we are already doing that are putting us on the path towards addressing these grand challenges, because by no means is the collaboratory finished or complete. It is very much underway and in its beginning stages. So yeah, that's a really great point.
Because one ultimate thing that might happen with the co-laboratory is it might become a central management tool to some of the aspects of managing the Delta. We don't know where we're going with it in that sense.
Yeah, thank you.
And maybe put in explicitly learning from the sort of test case that's going on right now. You know, make sure to make time to evaluate what we, you know, what we learned, lessons learned, and incorporate that in the next stage. Do we have any other comments? Well, we do have a decision point here to make in terms of, well, let's see, maybe I'm supposed to check in about public comments first. It isn't in this order in my directions, but let's check in and see if we have any public comments.
There are no public comments.
Okay, so it's up to us. So our decision point is, do we want to submit comments, written comments, during this open comment period? I think we've just had a nice interaction. I feel like we were heard. So I guess it's just a matter of, you know, is there advantage to putting this in writing? Feelings, you know, we do have a little reviews and things underway right now, and not reviews, but responsive documents underway right now. Is one comment I'll make, but I'm also willing to do whatever the board wants on this. No strong feelings. Yeah, I mean, I get the sense that, you know, I see Rachel taking notes. I see Tricia making good responses. I feel as though this was a good opportunity and we don't necessarily have to put things in writing. Inga, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lisa. I think it's not necessary. I mean, we don't, unless Tricia thinks that it's helpful, but from my side, I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, if anyone has not had the opportunity to share their full thoughts here, we do also have this survey for really quick responses. And also, yeah, I do feel like if I need clarification on any of these points, because I'm just taking down notes and people have not had an opportunity to write their thoughts, maybe that is something that we can do targeted separately.
Yeah, we have some other thoughts. Go ahead, Tom.
I just wanted to second Inga's and your comment that probably a written comment at this time isn't really needed.
We had a special audience. Virginia.
And I agree that written comments are necessary, but I wanted to thank you for allowing us to comment at this time. That is really helpful, and we appreciate you listening.
Yes. So that's a good closing note. I'll second what Virginia said. So then, yeah, I guess we say go ahead and run with that. And yeah, thanks for the check-in. I do think this is more helpful than waiting till the document is done, right? So, and yes, I think any of us would be happy to respond to emails if you had further questions or send them to staff, and we'll work out how the bright process. Okay.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thank you. And we now have a break scheduled. So it's a 20-minute break. So if we could come back, I'll just round up to 35 after the hour. So at 5 of 2, is that what it's going to be? Well, anyway, you'll figure it out. At 5 of the hour, come back, and we'll continue with our agenda. Thank you so much. Welcome back to the Delta Independent Science Board meeting. Our next agenda item is to discuss our review of the draft Delta Plan 5-year review report with performance measures report cards. So, a little background. The Delta Stewardship Council is in the process of conducting a second 5-year review of the Delta Plan to evaluate progress in implementing policies, recommendations, and performance measures. And they're now seeking public input on the findings and recommendations. So you're well aware of this. We talked about it last time. The Delta Stewardship Council staff presented and discussed the draft review at our last meeting. Based on that presentation, the board was interested in submitting written comments, and the council allowed us to submit comments just a little after the deadline of the public comment period, which was June 10th. We also discussed doing a deeper dive into the performance measures. I know there's quite a lot of interest in the board. I think a lot of us work on these kind of performance measures. But given that there are no current plans to amend these performance measures, we have a recommendation to just put that in our list of potential future reviews. There's no time urgency to do that. And we can think about whether that fits, where that fits into our schedule and how it relates to other priorities, such as those related to the Bay Delta Plan, Water Quality Control Plan update, where there will be similar issues, I think, but more specifically targeted to answering management questions. Okay, so our plan today is discuss the draft letter and discuss whether we're ready to submit the letter to the council. So Tanya Heikola took the lead on this, but as she's not available, I'm going to provide an overview. Yeah, you're gonna share? Okay, I'm gonna run through pretty fast. I'm not gonna try to read the whole letter, but I'm gonna highlight a few topics that I think are key points. First of all, we had a lot of praise for the approach. It was logical and well-organized and had many good qualities that were scattered throughout the letter. I'll get to more soon. But in terms of an overarching comment, we wanted a little more explanation of how the performance indicators were selected or how the values were determined. And some of that is online, but not everything that the board was looking for. We give some more details. So then we discussed things in three parts. Part one was the key five-year accomplishments. And we appreciated the emphasis on emerging issues that had been identified in the 2019 five-year review. Also, climate change issues were addressed in bringing up how... Sorry, did somebody say I'm breaking up? No. Okay, that was a weird echo then, I think. How climate change issues were dealt with in the Delta ADAPTS. We appreciated the development of the science tracker, which provides accessibility to Delta science results. But we wanted a little more clarity in the texts about how what emerging issues were advancing and which ones needed more attention to make progress. Okay, moving on to part two, the report cards. We praised that there was a useful mix of quantitative and qualitative evidence to illustrate key performance metrics in a way that was easy to digest and understand. It provides a very reasonable high-level view of the state of actions, activities, and some outcomes. But speaking of outcomes, we had a comment that we thought some of the outcomes could be more effective at representing really the desirable outcomes. And the example was acres of natural community restored doesn't have any kind of quality adjustment. So the question is that sufficient? The question is that sufficient for really representing what we're trying to get at with species effects. Another big comment was that metrics could be clearer about the time frame. So we weren't sure what some of the metrics about, 20% reduction, what was the time frame over which that was measured. Pretty important to include even in a high level assessment. And we had a lot more comments about places there could be more specificity. Then I think another big comment was that we wanted to understand better some of the limitations. And one of the limitations we were seeing was that you're not able to see temporal detail or spatial variability of performance metrics or the compounding cumulative effects of multiple metrics, say going well or going poorly. And that could be important for understanding things like cumulative effects to particular communities in the Delta, such as environmental justice communities. So the aggregation may be necessary and warranted for many things, but it also limits you. And so that would be good to acknowledge. And another key limitation was using representative species or metrics may not really give you full insight into the system. And so that also should be acknowledged. And we do understand there are no current plans to amend the Delta plan or the performance measures. There's a need that there was a recommendation made to just get the measures in place and measure them for a while before we start changing them. And that makes sense to us. But we hope that when there is a reevaluation, some of these comments will be incorporated in thinking about how to amend them. And then for part three, the regulatory analysis, there's a lot of description about how the Delta Stewardship Council's policies have connected with communities. They indicated they thought there was growing awareness of the process and authorities, but we suggested that might need to be studied to be sure that's really going on. We appreciate the call to collect information about the post-certification implementation of covered actions to just really evaluate how things are working. Okay, and then finally, I'm just going to move down to part four now. Okay, so summarizing our recommendations across these parts, more information on the process for selecting the set of recommendations identified in part four would be helpful. Could be a little more integration, and just more clarity on why certain metrics were picked and some were highlighted and some weren't, and we give a couple examples. In terms of more specifics, so there were several actions offered as implementation steps, but they were very general. And so it was really hard to see how ecosystem restoration would be accelerated with that guidance. And we give examples in the letter. I'm not going to go through the full details here. And then we also recommend considering the implications of recommended actions. And specifically, we had concerns about using a simple composite index to identify vulnerable communities and certain aspects of sociodemographics, that having many metrics in one index can really hide what's really driving changes in that metric. And so we suggest that might need revisiting. Okay, so I'm going to stop there and just see, you all had this in your meeting packet. And I also forgot to say thank you to all who contributed. This was definitely a good joint effort, and we appreciated everyone's distinct perspectives in pulling this together. Did folks have any concerns about how things were written, or any comments? I had a couple. All right, so hearing none, I'll just jump in with some of my comments. So I actually am a little confused about exactly how they would respond to right at the end of part one. It says the review notes that the council, quote, has made progress on some of these issues, unquote, page five, but could identify areas that still need progress. And I just wasn't, and this is specifically referring to the emerging issues from the 2019 five-year review. I would like us to be a little more specific on what we're talking about, because of course the metrics themselves show where there's good progress and lack of progress. So is it that we need to amend the text? Is it specific to the emerging issues? I guess I was just, if it were me responding to that, I would have a little trouble. And so I wondered if folks could clarify what would make it better specifically. Is it just writing more in the text? Is anyone?
Yeah. So this was actually one of Tanya's comments, and I actually did seek a little clarity from her. So on page five of the Delta Plan, they talked about the emerging issues, but it doesn't clearly state out what the emerging issues were from the 2019 review. So I think like this is one where it's like more of like an in-text modification. Because they do talk about the emerging issues like Delta as place, which they say we need to wait for an environmental justice paper, and federal coordination, which was like another emerging issue that is being done through DPIC, so they don't really mention it. So it's kind of in there, but I think it's more like an in-text modifications to clarify what the 2019 emergent issues were.
Okay, so maybe we could amend the letter just slightly to clarify that, because that didn't come across well to me when I was reading it.
Okay.
And then I just had a couple little wordsmithing things in part two. Another limitation worth noting is that using representative, let's see, I've already changed the wording in my version, so I need your version. So it's a paragraph that starts, another limitation worth noting. Where is that? There it is. So we say, and I agree with the statement, but I think this could use some clarity. So we dislike picking just a representative species, and I think most of us recognize that has limitations for fully representing the system. But just to say it's a reductionist approach, and it needs to be interpreted with caution, I think we could add more here to help people understand why a reductionist approach is undesirable just in case it's not obvious. So I have some words I could suggest, or you know, I think we could say something like different species or processes respond to conditions differently, and you know, there probably isn't one umbrella species that's going to represent all important stressors and changes. You know, something along those lines is what I would recommend. I don't know if others have better wording.
If I'm screen sharing, you probably can't see the screen, but Inga has her hand raised.
Oh, thanks. Inga, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I had to switch to my phone. I hope you can all hear and see me. I think the main point of this is to just interpret data with caution and say so, that it is a reductionist approach. I think it makes sense to take this approach just to make it doable. You know what I mean? To make it affordable, to make it doable. But it needs to be recognized that interpretation has to be very cautious, you know, with regard to other species, with regard to the ecosystem as a whole. So I think that's the point here.
Okay, so the point is to add some caveats, but I just think it would be better to define why reductionist is undesirable, just more specifically. Yeah. We all and have that, it in our heads, you know, but yeah.
And that's good too, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a caveat, yeah, that would just explain why you wouldn't want to take these indicators too far, because they don't represent necessarily all the effects. Yeah, all
exactly.
Effects. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I had. I mean, I just had those little issues of doesn't sound like anyone else had any concerns. I think it's well written. Okay, let's see if we need a roll call vote here.
Yeah, we need public comments and then we could do a roll call vote.
Yeah, there I am. Yes. Okay. So do we have any public comments? Edmund?
There are none.
Sorry. Okay. You were checking. Okay, very good. Okay. So we need a motion. I can work with the staff to submit the letter after my comments from today are addressed. So that's what I need, a motion and a second on that.
So I move that we accept the letter with a few minor comments as mentioned here. And I should say there are a few punctuation comments I'll add, very minor.
And I think we just have to add that I'll be the one that is making the modifications. So
Lisa will make those modifications for Tanya.
Yeah, since Tanya's traveling.
I second that.
All right, well now we'll do a roll call vote. Virginia?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Anna?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Obey?
Yes.
Kenny?
Yes.
Inga?
Yes.
And I also say yes. So it's unanimous. It passes. We will take care of that. Okay, moving on to agenda item 6. We have a presentation on the draft Delta Adapts Adaptation Plan update. Well, that's a mouthful. And so let me give a little background. The Delta Adapts consists of two parts, a climate change vulnerability assessment for the Delta and Susan March, and an adaptation plan detailing strategies and actions to adapt and respond to the identified vulnerabilities. So vulnerability adaptation. The council staff presented an update at our last public meeting on the draft adaptation plan, and the ISB is interested in reviewing and providing written comments during the public comment period. We agreed that OBE would take the lead to draft the letter with individual ISB members providing feedback, but we are still waiting for the report to be released. There's been a delay and staff are going to distribute it as soon as it's ready.
So Lisa, can we clarify there is no presentation today.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was curious about that. Who's presenting?
You had it last month.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a leftover in my notes. Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay, so we don't have a presentation. We only need to discuss, well, it's really just a quick update. So we're letting you know the status. Does anybody have any comments at this point? Does Obey want to get out of it? No.
I wish. Is there any target date for the release?
I don't think so, Edmund.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I hate to give a target date. There's a lot of uncertainty right now with the internal review, so it's taking a little bit longer.
And just to reemphasize, I need input from others on topics that I'm not an expert on. So, like you said, Lisa.
I think many people had feelings about this, and they will certainly send you comments, but I think we want to see the report first. Not quite enough detail in the presentation to make a lot of comments. So, okay, well then, are there any public comments on this, Edmund?
Yes, we have one from Deirdre Dan. Deirdre, you have the ability to unmute your microphone. Thank you.
Thank you. I have been following Delta DApps, and I also had a chance to go to the workshop for the Just Transitions Project, and Dan Kyan was there from Scripps, and I had a chance to really talk to him about some of the limitations of the climate models. And he did agree that the climate models might not be capturing the ridging that we've been seeing. So the ridiculously resilient ridge that we saw off of the coast that led to the 2012 to 2016 drought is very rare in climate models. And there's something aspect they might not be capturing. It's becoming more something a climate research community is looking at, as we also see this step increase in temperatures, which is still ongoing. And it's not clear at this point if global temperatures are actually going to go down by August. And if they don't, we could be in uncharted territory, as Gavin Schmidt put. So I think it's really, at the same time there is, I did get Dr. Kyan new information about the high-res climate modeling showing we could be flipping into a wetter period. And he did agree that was a very interesting development. So I think this does tie into your decision-making under deep uncertainty review. I've seen a lot of the efforts within the Delta Science Program sort of assume that the path that we've seen for the last decade of very dry years and isolated wet years is going to continue. It's not clear if that's going to happen, but I think there's probably going to be there may be a step increase in global temperatures, and we did see one in 2013. So I will keep working on trying to communicate this information, but I think there's a real need for the science since Delta DApps has really advanced. And I would like to see since the vulnerability study, and I'd like to see us taking that into account. Thank you.
Thanks, Deirdre. Yeah, I think that's a relevant point and very, very similar to some points we're making in the DMDU. But I guess what we can also take away is, on average, California will be fine. It's going to be a lot of drought years. It's going to be a lot of wet years. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, this brings to mind, we've never really had a briefing on updating us on climate change issues. And when we put together our work plan, them just having a panel of experts that we could have a serious discussion with might be really informative for the panel. I mean, it's so critical to the Delta that the more attention it gets, the better, particularly, you know, dealing with the uncertainty in these models.
Yeah, and this is also relevant to the five-year plan, where they are depending on Delta adapts to raise the climate change issues. So there's a synergy here. Yeah. Obey, what were you going to say?
Yes, I agree with Tom that I think prior meeting, we discussed that idea of having a discussion on this topic. And I think we need to follow through. But I just want to mention that National Academy just released a report on modernizing probable maximum precipitation. This is more relevant to high hazard dams and nuclear power plants. And I think there's a lot of climate modeling, suggested in that for those very rare events. And I was part of that committee, and it would be worthwhile, looking at that report. I mean, I see the statistics in a day. There were like 50 to 100 people downloaded that report in California alone. So I think this is a topic probably relevant to us, particularly if we have significant droughts followed by a very wet period, and we discuss the issue of watershed changes, because we have a forest fire and the hydrology changes rapidly, and you have a big wet event, and that flow characteristics might completely change. It's something which we didn't see in the prior effort. So anyway, this is a topic I think we should discuss sometime, like Tom is suggesting.
Yeah, getting up to date on emerging climate research and what it means for California. Yeah, that would be great. So thank you, Deirdre, for raising that important point. Okay, so do we have any other public comments?
There are none, thank you.
Okay, well then with that, we'll close out this. We will wait for that report and then move on from there. You may be contacted by email, so make sure you're paying attention when the request comes in to help prepare that review letter. So agenda item 7, a discussion of the Food Webs review and the public comments we've received. And I'll do a little background before I turn it over to Bob. So the Delta Independent Science Board has sought input on the draft review and still is seeking input. And the review is exploring scientific and management implications of upper trophic level food webs in the Delta. And we developed a draft report that was based on a review of the literature, public comments on the perspective, and at Delta ISB meetings, including, of course, a focus 2-day workshop. And the goal of this review is to provide information that would help organizations, including state and federal agencies, assess how to better incorporate and advance food web knowledge in managing the Delta's ecosystems and to identify what tools are available or could be developed. So public comments were originally due on June 7th, but we provided a slight extension to June 14th. Okay, so I take that back. We are not currently seeking comments. So now we do have the full set of comments that we're going to get, and we want to discuss those. I'll also note that the release period coincided with the IEP workshop, the Interagency Ecological Program, which occurred from April 23 to April 25, and also the UC Davis Coastal Marine Science Institute and Delta Science Program Food Web Symposium on May 31st. So Dr. Nyman is going to share the informal feedback he got at those meetings. And so now I'll just turn it over to Bob.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. Boy, you covered just about everything for me there. as you said, the comment period did close on June 14th, and we received both formal as well as informal comments from probably, I don't have the full list in front of me, but probably 9 to 10 different either organizations or individuals. And they ranged from very specific to very general comments. And right now, Lisa and Kenny and Lauren and Edmund and I met via Zoom a couple of days ago to discuss a strategy for moving forward. And where we are right now is I am going through all the comments. Some of them are trying to categorize them as to whether they can be handled, you know, easily with just a few word changes and so forth, or if it's something where we need to add a paragraph or change a few sentences to make it clearer. So anyway, I'm just working through all of those at the moment. My best guess is that we will have, or I will be able to get through this phase of the revision in another 10 to 14 days. And at that time, Lisa and Kenny and I will reconvene to make sure that we have it the way we'd like it. There were a couple of comments that related to items that are a little bit difficult for me to respond to fully, that are probably more in the domain of Kenny's expertise. And so he has agreed to look at those more carefully. They have to do with modeling and whether we should spend more time on EcoPath or EcoSim in the document. But Kenny's agreed to look at those and provide me with a few sentences sometime in the next few days, and I'll see how those might be incorporated into the document. So basically, with the Food Web report, we're moving ahead. I'm categorizing all the various comments that we did receive, working through them, answering the ones that are relatively straightforward, and hope to have that process pretty well finished in a couple of weeks. And then we'll have another internal meeting with the subgroup and decide whether or if or when, you know, we would bring it back to the board for you to take a look at. As part of the process, as an aside, as Lisa said, I did give a presentation at the Food Web Symposium at UC Davis 3 weeks ago, and that seemed to be very well received. There were no surprising comments coming back from the audience. At least I didn't feel that they were surprising. It was kind of, you know, some issues that we were going to have to deal with anyway. And the people or the individuals that did make any comments, they had already provided us with written comments along the same lines. So basically, I'm working through those right now. To just a little bit about the meeting, there is a report that will be coming out probably in a couple of weeks on that particular meeting and or the symposium. Sorry, and it was really timely because in our Food Web report, you know, we're looking to the community, the broader Delta community, to kind of take the reins and go forward with meetings like this or putting together groups like this. And we've seen, and you know, this was really the first one that's come to light where you're really thinking about food webs and how it can be, information about food webs can be used to improve ecosystem-based fisheries management. And at the symposium, there was a keynote by Lisa Marie Wingham-Myers and Matt Young that outlined some things. There were a number of other presentations, especially by younger researchers and researchers from the Delta Science Program that were really fascinating. But one of them, just to give you an idea of one of the surprises that came out of this, one of the presentations was by a graduate student at UC Davis, Abigail Ward, who's working with a larger group up and down the coast, and looking at how shifts in the diet of Chinook salmon offshore are affecting their mortality once they're back in the estuary in the river. And she gave a very articulate presentation about how Chinook have shifted over to feeding more on anchovies. As ocean conditions have changed, anchovies are becoming a lot more available to them as food, whereas herring are becoming a lesser part of their diet. Well, it ends up that anchovies carry a lot of thymidinase, the enzyme thymidinase, which breaks down thiamine, vitamin B12. And so they end up with a thiamine deficiency by the time they've ended up back in the estuary in fresh waters, causing a surprising amount of mortality. And so once they discover this, they're actually adding vitamin B12 thymine, to the hatcheries, or even injecting it into adult fish, and finding that this Chinook are doing much, much better with this application of vitamin B12 to their system. So anyway, the presentations at this particular meeting kind of went along in that light, that there's just a lot of really surprising information coming out about how changes in food webs are affecting the overall vitality of the system. And if there's a way by which our report can act as a catalyst to help bring, more of these kinds of situations to light, I think we will have made a good step forward. The report, I think, will be well received. We're also giving one additional presentation at the Bay Delta Science Conference at the end of September, and it'll be along the same lines as the one that I gave at the UC Davis symposium. What else can I tell you? I think that's about it. So probably, unless you have questions, look for something, a revision of the document, probably in another 3 to 4, well, maybe for longer than that, probably 4 to 6 weeks, most likely. And it'll take some time to work through all the various comments and respond to them in a good way. And hopefully everyone will agree.
Bob, can I make a suggestion? And Tom, I see you have your hand up, but I would just like to articulate a few more things about the comments first, and maybe Kenny wants to weigh in, but would you care to just identify any themes you were seeing in them, and maybe what it means for the scope of the review? Or, I think it'd be useful to share a little bit more information about the kinds of comments, if possible, if you're prepared to do so.
Well, I can just give you my impressions right now. One impression is that folks would like to see us be a lot more specific about what should actually be done going forward. And that's a bit problematic to me. I haven't quite decided how to handle that yet, because I think we can do that a little bit, but it's really up to the community to decide what specific activities should be undertaken going forward. And I'm wrestling with that at the moment as to how to address that. Another comment that has cropped up a couple of times, which I still don't fully understand, because I thought we had taken care of this long ago, but as several folks or individuals felt that we were discounted the great body of research that's already been done on food webs in the Delta and in San Francisco Bay. And we tried to, acknowledge, and obviously we didn't to everyone's satisfaction, tried to acknowledge that there has been a lot of work that's gone on over the last, several decades on food webs in the Bay. The one thing that has not been done, it's been done in a few specific instances, is syntheses of that knowledge, essentially bringing it all together and telling a story. And that's, we try to bring that out in our report. But others, seem to feel that I would say they don't disagree with that, but I guess I have the sense that they would like to see a lot more in the way of the existing literature cited in the document. Now, along those lines, when we were putting everything together early on, we decided to pull that out as a separate document. And Lillian McCormick was to do a synthesis evaluation of the existing literature. And as far as I know, that has not been completed yet. She's done, she pulled together, several hundred documents and reviewed them all and started writing on it. But I don't have a good timeline on that as to when it will be completed. Some of the reviewers brought out the fact that there were all of these documents in what I want to call a deep gray literature that we did not cite. And until they brought them up, I don't know how we would have discovered them. We've discovered them now because they brought them up, but they were not readily discoverable by any means that I know of, other than the fact that individuals had worked on them, but they seem to be, buried in files, some of them anyway, buried in files of various agencies. But we're bringing those forward. If they're useful, we'll bring those forward now. The third thing that one of the comments we've gotten is that, we need to do, do a better job discussing the role that the models, EcoPath and EcoSim might play going forward. Now, personally, I had thought that we did a good job in the existing report with this, but since it's not in my area of expertise, Kenny has agreed to take a look at that and come up with a few sentences or more, I guess, if needed. But there are certain folks who would like to see the report be more of an analysis or a report on how the various models might be used in the Delta. And that to me is kind of a whole subject onto itself. And I guess we're still internally, we're still kind of wrestling with how to handle that one. So Lisa, does that help?
It does. I mean, I just really wanted to. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I'm doing a lot of wrestling with these things right now. I'm trying to figure out which ones to include and if they are includable, how to include them.
Yeah, so I hear you bringing up the same theme we heard from our presenters today, that it's premature perhaps to try to set priorities, or the community needs to really come together to decide what some of the priorities are. So that's one thing. And then I just want to acknowledge the fact that we got a lot of very detailed and useful comments from folks that, frankly, we're happy that folks really took the time to consider the content and what they would add. And so just want to give them a good acknowledgement. Kenny, do you want to add anything?
No, I thought Bob did a very good job summarizing. I think part of the food web comments is that we are kind of loose in the report when we say food webs and then upper trophic level food webs. And there's been extensive work done on the lower trophic level food webs, extensive. And I think sometimes we have to be a little more, I think it's easy to fix, be more precise when we're what appears to be criticizing them, although I thought it was pretty positive. But and I think if we make sure we're precise in what we're saying needs to be done, I think that would help. But other than that, no, that was a good summary.
Okay, Tom, finally, we're ready for your question, comment.
Oh, this segues really well into my question, because Kenny's comment was basically what I was going to ask about. I read the comments rather than the review and prepping for the meeting. And what struck me were the number of times people referred to the missing part of the upper trophic food web, the birds and animals at the top. And I thought that was interesting, but then somebody says there's millions of migratory birds, and that tells me that could be pretty significant. So my question is, could you do a better job in the report of sort of carving out what you're addressing? Because this upper trophic or whatever you call it seems like it should be an important part of a food web model for the Delta.
Yeah, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up. It completely went over my went out of my thinking at the moment. But yeah, that was brought up a couple of times, and also the fact that we don't know very much about the abundance and distribution of the large fishes, or even, you know, for the bulk of fishes. And I've already started to address that in my own revisions, is that the lack of information on the abundance and distribution of the large fishes is one issue, and it needs to probably, it will be highlighted. The second one has to do with the birds and mammals, is that we had, I don't know how many discussions about this leading up to the workshop, and it was very hard to find information on that. And so we tended to ignore it towards the end of the process of food web process we went through. But it certainly is probably a major gap that needs to be identified, and it will be. I just have to figure out how to write it in a way so that it comes forward, is that we're missing that, definitely missing that right now.
Yeah, I think it's important because a lot of the comments and from pretty influential people address that challenge.
Yeah, that's interesting that they should come up now, because when we had all of the meetings, the outreach with various groups, it seldom came up, and it was brought up internally within our group, but there didn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for it out there in the broader community. And now we're getting comments back from the broader community, and they're bringing that back in. And so anyway, I'll see that it's woven into the final report.
It's called a sucker punch.
Well, and I can just second what Tom said, in that, you know, the birds turned out to be pretty important in managing a fishery here in the Chesapeake Bay, where people were they did some modeling, some food web modeling, to show that the birds were limited in their, you know, the fish they were eating, because so much was going to the fishery. So it changed the management of it. So yeah, birds certainly can be important. But, and so even if we didn't research it in specific or have talks about it at the workshop, I think we can say, depending on the management question, this could be an important thing to consider including.
Right.
So, okay.
Other comments or questions? Well, if not, if you do have some afterwards, just send me an email and copy it to Edmund. And anyway, it'll probably be at least 4 weeks, maybe six. I'm hoping by then, you know, we can get a revision out to everybody, and we'll go from there.
Okay, and we'll just check in to see if there are any public comments.
There are none.
Steve didn't show up? Okay. All right. In that case, we will move on to the next agenda item, number 8, to discuss the subsidence review. So Tom, you're going to be up in a minute. Let me just give a quick background. On October 19th and 20th, 2023, we conducted a public workshop in Sacramento that focused on basic and applied science that would improve management of subsided lands in the Delta. So Tom's going to provide us with a brief update on drafting the report based off the workshop.
Okay, I'll start with the bottom line. The plan is to discuss it at the July meeting. At least that's what Edmund has told me the schedule is. We actually were ready for this meeting, but we had enough on the plate that Edmund elected to defer it. And I think it's really ready for a review by the board now. We've sort of, there was a lot of rewriting, which is what sort of took us on, and then with the deadlines for getting things in before meetings, it was a little bit of a challenge, but I think it's in pretty good shape now, and we'll have a draft ready for the board at the next meeting.
We look forward to that, Tom. Good.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Any comments from the board? Questions? How about any public comments, Edmund?
There are none.
Okay, last call. Okay, we'll move on to the next item. Agenda item 9, public comments for matters that are not on the agenda, but within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Delta ISB.
None for this item either. Thank you.
Okay. And now we're to item 10, preparation for upcoming Delta ISB meetings. So for the July meeting, as Tom just said, we're planning to discuss the subsidence review draft. We'll discuss progress on addressing public comments on the food webs review. We hope to elect a new chair elect, and we'll have an update on the DMDU review. So that's the plan for July. And then in August, which will be a virtual meeting, both of these will be virtual, we'll have a Delta Stewardship Council chair and executive officer report. So we haven't had one of those in a while. We'll hear a bit on the final environmental impact report comments. So we need to get that taken care of. We have the Delta Lead Scientist Vision, Lisa Marie. Is going to be presenting at some point. We'll see if that happens at the August, but probably it could happen a little later. So that's tentative. Okay, so that covers everything. Did I miss anything, Edmund?
You didn't miss anything, but we do have to consider some of the board's interest in having some briefing presentations like on climate change. So that's not off the table. We're just trying to squeeze it in. We're just trying to schedule those because it takes time because our agendas are packed for the next few months.
Yeah, I think on that topic, I like the idea of having some briefing, but I was wondering if we could make it like a mini workshop. I know we have too many things going on, but at some point, bring the sea level rise projections update for California, and maybe some climate science update, particularly relevant to California. If we can have, bring some people who have worked on those topics into a workshop session, maybe 3 or 4 presentations to get the latest update on climate science, climate projections, and others. You know, at least we educate ourselves on the science aspects of climate change, with reference to California, not in general, but, that's kind of what my thinking because we need to bring the sea level rise, climate, other rainfall and other aspects into one meeting so we can discuss all of them at one time. I don't know what you all think about that, but have a mini workshop on this topic.
I second that.
Yeah, and we'd need to hear from the agencies what they have in the works too to update this and not assume they're not doing anything.
More so to get the science aspects more so than, and then we can talk to the agencies because
the agencies have scientists working on this, so that's the overlap.
Okay, that would be good if they work on what are the latest thinking on projections and implications and so forth.
Yeah, right. Not every agency, but
I'm thinking that, like someone like Dan Kyan, I think Deirdre mentioned, folks like that who understands what's happening on the ground. in the scientific arena. And that could include agency folks as well.
Yeah, very good. Okay, someone had a hand up.
Yeah, I did real quick. So the next in-person meeting is the end of, is the beginning, when is it, September? Or is it, no, it's beginning of October is the next in-person meeting?
That's great. My understanding, Edmund.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's actually, but if you want to come to the Bay Delta conference, that would, whatever it's called, that would start on September 30th and go through the second, and then our workshop starts on the third. So
yeah, I won't be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so all of this is subject to change in terms of future meetings. We'll see what priorities and what people we can get booked. So we will take that into consideration. So at this point, I'll turn it over. Oh, do we need to ask for public comments on future agendas?
We do, and we have one from Deirdre Desjardins.
Please go ahead.
Go ahead, Deirdre, you have the ability to unmute your microphone. Thank you.
Thank you. So I had, as you know, I did a really extensive reading of the literature over the past 18 months, and I read about 1,600 papers. And what I'm finding now, and I'm following some of the leading researchers in the world, and so it's federal agencies that have the expertise. When I talk with Dan Kyan, who's one of the foremost climate scientists in California, he's more looking at application. There's people like Clara Desser at NCAR or Robert Jingling Wills, who I just sent you guys a briefing. He gave an excellent presentation. He's at ETH Zurich, but he grew up in Martinez, and he's been leading the research on the pattern effect. And Haiyang Tang at Lawrence Livermore, I believe, is the one who's been doing the community earth system model experiments. So California climate scientists have not been incorporating any of the large ensemble model forcing experiments or even large ensemble models in their adaptation work. And those experiments are starting to become pretty important. So I've been reaching out to agency scientists. I regularly talk with like Andrew Schwartz at DWR. I sent him a briefing on this. But as I've been reaching out to everybody in California, I end up being the one who briefs them on this. It's very much breaking science. It just happens to be critically important because climate change is accelerating. And normally it would take, you know, I think 5 to 10 years for this to filter down, but we don't have a time. That's what's happening. So anyway, I could try and recommend some people who are up on this. There were folks at the Equilibrium Climate Sensitivity Scenario from like leading researchers from a lot of the national labs, Gavin Schmidt from the Goddard Institute for Space Sciences, and Clara Desser, Michelle LeHoux from NOAA. So those are the people who could really brief you on this research. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Deirdre. Yeah, we will accept those suggestions and look across the research and see who we need to invite. Thank you so much. Okay, any other comments on this? Seeing none, I will turn it over to Edmund for agenda item 11, a review of items for follow-up.
So at today's meeting, both Dr. Rose and Dr. Mikulak made declarations. We'll make notes of those and put it on our disclosure page. For the grand challenges discussion, the board decided not to submit written comments, but if members want to submit some written feedback or take the grand challenges survey, feel free to do so and let staff know. For the Delta Plan five-year review, the board made a motion that was passed to have Lisa and Tanya address the comments from today and get those submitted to the Delta Stewardship Council staff. For the Food Web's review, Bob and Kenny and Lisa are addressing public comments, and then a revised draft should be available between 4 to 6 weeks. For the subsidence review, that should be a focus of your July meeting, so just keep a lookout for a public draft of that for discussion, and then we'll continue to brainstorm the idea of having a climate change panel slash workshop for later in the year, perhaps, but more to come on that. Anything else to add? All right.
Captured. Well, just we can't lose sight of the fact that we still are planning to do comments on the EIR review comments. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's getting lost.
Lisa, maybe I know this is a longer term effort to put together a climate workshop panel, but maybe if we can identify maybe at some point, maybe at the next meeting, a subgroup who would put that together as a sort of a proposal to the board, and then we go from there for planning it, identifying which scientists you need to invite, or I don't know.
That's an idea.
Have, like two or three people getting together and
we'll figure that out. That you know, we don't like to do too much of that. So we'll figure out the best process to identify those folks.
Okay.
Kenny.
So I've made some progress on the EIR response that I was assigned. I should have something ready probably for the next meeting.
That'd be great.
I think we're talking about the meeting after, but I'll make believe it's the next meeting. So that
so it gets done. Great. Thanks, Kenny. Obey, did you, is that
left
overhand?
No. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, I think we are actually done, but let's just check if there are any other public comments on the review of items for follow-up.
Yeah, I just want to make sure Deirdre is out old hand. Or do you have a public comment on this? I think it might be an old hand that wasn't lowered. Yes, it was. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
No additional public comments.
All right. With that, we are adjourned. Happy heat wave, everyone.
Thank you.